TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports,
baby!
All the time. A division of Bell Media. Live from St. Patel Center for the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive in support of the Christmas Cheer Board. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live in the food hall at St. Patel Center, thrilled to be a part of the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined, not in studio, but in front of this nice fireplace, by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. If you are down at St. Patel Center, come and say hello to us. We're always friendly. We like to hear from our fans. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, boys. It's fantastic. We're broadcasting live. We're going to get some toys and some money.
Yeah, you know those aren't for you, though, right? You can't help yourself to the toys.
But it's fantastic. And we have about 30 different restaurants to choose from here in the food hall.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I'm going to go hit Orange Julius in a second.
It's something I'm sure that you're going to like. You know what? Doesn't look like there's a latke place anywhere, which is a little disappointing.
Right.
A happy Hanukkah to both of you. Tonight is the first night of Hanukkah.
You as well, Drew. You know, they're giving away so many toys here at the St. Patel Center that I actually saw a cart be rolled by with 1290 producer Adam Toy inside of it.
Really?
Yeah,
we're giving away Adam Toy as well as the toys?
He's gone, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, that is just tremendous.
That's how generous the people are here.
That is just tremendous generosity for
people. I think TSN 1290 program director Chris Brook is going to have something to say about that, but it's a good one. Richie was waiting to get that on air.
Oh, for sure.
A little bit
it's going to be fun here today.
Well, you know what? At least we can have fun here. It's a great cause to hear at St. Vitale Center. You know, the Christmas Miracle is a great cause, obviously going to the Christmas Cheer Board, and everyone's in a good mood. It's the holiday season. I'll tell you when they weren't in a good mood. Thursday night. You know, Thursday night was the true reality television when it comes to the NHL and the collective bargaining and negotiations. First of all, I should mention before we go any further, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear your comments there, of course. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest NHL collective bargaining news, the Winnipeg Jets news, is IllegalCurve.com. But let's go back to Thursday night, because you really just don't see raw emotion out of Gary Bettman quite like what you saw on Thursday night. And for a guy who's really thought of as being pretty slick and pretty polished and, you know, the lawyerly type where nothing really phases him, Thursday night he was phased by the negotiating methods of Donald Fehr.
Well, the reality is we haven't seen, you know, melodrama like that since an episode of Days of Our Lives. It was unbelievable. Donald Fehr coming out and telling the world, who, by the way, through Twitter, through TV, you know, we broadcasted it live on TSN 1290. Everybody's following this, you know, clinging on to a hope that there's going to be a season, a 50-game season, a 60-game season, whatever. And the fact that Donald Fehr came out and said that the NHLPA and NHL were close on a number of economic issues, and then to come out 20 minutes later and tell everybody that the owners had rejected the deal and now they were more far apart than ever, it was unbelievable. I mean, you could see why Gary Bettman was so upset. It was one of the biggest PR, you know, disasters in recent memory. I mean, that thing seemed so planned and calculated. I mean, it was unbelievable. And to be honest with you, what's going on with these negotiations? People, and I know we're going to get into this later, but, you know, Donald Fehr coming in the negotiating room, Richie, and then leaving, and certain players leaving and coming back, owners flying in, flying out. I mean, it was almost like mass hysteria.
You know what? I have a different take on this whole thing than I think a lot of people do, for the most part. At the end of the day, I think what we saw on Thursday was heightened negotiating that involved the public. I think this was all a negotiation ploy by both sides. I think these are both seasoned negotiators. Do I think it's gone on too long? Absolutely. I think they've wasted a ton of time, and more importantly for them, a ton of money. Maybe more importantly for other people who rely on the NHL, you know, their businesses and such. Yeah, of course, they've wasted a ton of people's time and money. Having said that, that was a negotiation ploy. Donald Fehr's press conference was a negotiation ploy. The negotiations going back and forth, what do you think they're doing? Well, they're trying to get as much as they can for their constituents. And You may not like it, and you may have thought, you know, Gary Bettman lost is cool, and he may have, but Gary Bettman lost is cool with the prime intention of trying to break the union. Just as Donald Fehr came out there and said they had an agreement on the figures to try and have the owners break up and say, okay, fine, give them a year or two, and we'll talk about the issues in a little bit.
They're both adopting a divide-and-conquer strategy.
That's right. We heard all about Donald Fehr being a deadline hunter, and he's proved to be that.
And let me just to explain that further, as in he's not really going to be interested in making a deal until they're right at the deadline.
That's right.
And at that point in time, you know, they might call each other's bluff or not, and we could be without a season, but it's not going to really get down to the nitty-gritty until that first week of January, which is what most people are guesstimating as the real deadline.
I think January 1st is probably the real deadline, in my opinion, but you know what?
Or somewhere around there, give or take a week.
Yeah, I just think that this is all... It was entertaining television. It was clearly a little bit of anarchy there in terms of both the players and then the owners replying and all that stuff. But the rest of it's more very calculated, guys. Take into account the owners fly in, then they all fly out, then they all release statements that are basically the same thing. The players go to Twitter and voice their opinions. This is all planned beforehand. The owners don't release an angry statement. That's talked about with the NHL, what's to release. The players, they speak to the players and say, you know, speak your mind, get out there. And the problem is, you know, to get a deal done, the owners who aren't vocal, who aren't involved, just as the players who aren't vocal, who aren't involved. Maybe there's a bunch of players, and we've read this week that there are, who want to play. Well, then, you know, like, get up and say something. Same with the owners. If you want to play, get up and say something. Take them. And we're having Ray Ratto on later on in the show from the Comcast.
CSNBayArea.com. He's the preeminent San Francisco area columnist and has been for probably, you know, two decades at this point in time.
You know, move forward. I mean, enough's enough kind of thing. So
let me ask you this. Here's why I think Thursday was a little bit different. First of all, it's the first true CBA negotiation, or this negotiation, is the first true one that's happened in the age of instantaneous messaging, in the age of Twitter. So I think that changes the people's connection to the actual negotiation.
In a negative manner, by the way.
Of course. In a
negotiation, if you're having a negotiation, whether it be over a house, or whether it be, you know, over a certain property, whether it be over your salary, whether it be over anything, you will toss out a number of ideas in a negotiation, many of which you don't ever want to try, some of which you use for leverage, whatever it may be. The problem in this case is that every single idea tossed out within a negotiation is somehow leaked to Twitter. And if it's leaked to Twitter, it's taken as gospel, when half of it is probably garbage.
And Richie, the reality is that we live in the day and age of social media with Twitter, and that if I'm going to tweet that I'm, you know, having a coffee at St. Vitale Center right now, obviously we're going to hear every little move. I mean, our friend Constantine, who is from Winnipeg and now he's working for the UN in New York, we're going to hopefully get him on at the end. He kind of rose to stardom because he got into these meetings and he was tweeting every little thing.
By the way, and I love Constantine, but the fact that he was able to get into those meetings
tells
you everything you need to know about the NHL.
Right. But, you know, sticking on the topic, you know, Richie said it's negative, the day and age of social media. And you got to remember, in 2004, 2005, it was just before Facebook and Twitter. But what happens now is there's just so much confusion. I mean, the reality is we already really know. This lockout's coming to an end very quickly. They're going to come to, if there's going to be a season, the deal's going to get done in the next 4 weeks. But the thing is, you have players, owners, media is going back and forth. And it's confusing everybody, really.
The best part about it, and I want to talk about the issues in the next segment, Drew, but the best part about it is this. You can tell who the insider sources are because nobody has a story anymore. So the insider sources are clearly in the room. It's like the easiest thing. That's one thing I'm taking from this is you have like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys in the room.
Yeah.
No stories break during that time. When they get out of the room, that's when all the stories break. So who do you think all the sources are?
Well, the sources are the people in the rooms, obviously.
But I'm talking on a general basis, too.
Here's why I think Thursday night was different. And this is where Donald Fehr made a tactical error. And this is why for the most part, I would say, and this is just anecdotally, the public opinion has dramatically shifted in favor of the owners rather than the players. Donald Fehr on Thursday night with his initial press conference, the one where he said we're close to a deal when that was not factually the case, he played with people's emotions. And when you play, and Donald Fehr I think, doesn't give a damn about people's emotions.
He gives a damn about the bottom line for the players.
Right. And I'm not, and that's what his purpose should be. But the vitriol you hear now that is going against the players and against Donald Fehr is simply because he is playing with people's emotions, and people do not stand for that.
And when you say that, people, it should be
he
clear.
He artificially gets people's emotions excited.
Right.
Hockey's going to be back. I'm going to be able to spend Christmas watching my favorite team, or whatever, the holiday season, watching my favorite team. And then he pulls the rug out from under you because there was no basis for his comments to begin with.
Is he the commissioner of the game, though?
No, we know he's not.
Does he have to represent anything other than the player's interest? That's a question you can ask. So the other thing is, are they not close to a deal? As far as I'm concerned, they're about 4 years apart in totality, and then a couple other little things from a deal. To me, that's as close. It's comical how close the sides are. Take out the noise for a second, and I want to talk about the issues next segment.
Okay.
It is comical how close the sides are right now.
And they've been this close for a while now. It's not like, you know, this past week, you know, miracles happened and they bridged this enormous gulf.
Well, they went up to $300 million.
They went up to $300 million, which you knew that they were going to do. You knew that they were going to have to do a little bit better on the make whole. But for it to be portrayed as there's been this massive gulf all along would not be accurate. You know, we've been saying this from day one, way back the months ago before the season was supposed to even start. There's a deal there to be made. It's been there the entire time. And what Ray Ratto, who's going to join us coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon, is saying, yes, the deal's there, but it's not about the deal anymore. It's now about the personality clashes between Donald Fehr and primarily Jeremy Jacobs on the owner's side.
And at this stage in the negotiations, Drew, they're even closer than they were before. So for them to come out, and we should clarify the reason why it's such a farce, everybody knew the NHLPA was rejecting that offer. That's why you got to clear that up. I mean, that's why you raise everyone's hopes, and you're right. I mean, at this point, it's clear. We're going to talk about it later. I know the hill to die on is something that you want to talk about, but they want 5-year term limits. And that seems to be the bigger deal as opposed to the make-whole money.
And I want to talk, next segment we'll talk about the issues, but I want to talk even the segment after, Drew. Sorry, kind of hijacking the show plan. I want to talk about solutions to those issues if we don't get it in next segment.
Well, the solutions are pretty reasonable, and we'll get to that. So I'll tell you what. Why don't we go to break? When we come back, we're going to talk about the TD toy train that just arrived here at St. Vitale Center for the 30th annual Christmas Miracle. We'll get into more CBA, sort of a combination good news, the Christmas Miracle, bad news, the CBA negotiation sort of day here. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live from the St. Vitale Center Food Hall on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live at the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive, live from the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. All proceeds go to the Christmas Cheer Board. It's just a terrific event, and we're pleased to welcome in to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Ann Taylor. You're the District Vice President from TD Canada Trust, and some would say you're also Santa Claus, given the amount of toys you just showed up here with.
Thanks. It's been an awesome day today. We've been collecting toys and cash donations at our TD Canada Trust branches, and today we had our toy train, and we brought in 700 toys.
Wow, just fabulous.
And, yeah, and we also brought in $3,890 more dollars in cash donations
that were made
at our branches.
That's just terrific. You know, why is it important for TD Canada Trust to be involved in this program? I mean, a lot of, you know, it's a great time of the year with people chipping in and helping out those who might be less fortunate. Why is it important to TD to be involved in it?
Well, TD's been involved since 2001, and we really, really want to give back to our community, the great community that we work and we live in. And giving back to children is so, so very important. So we really want to make Christmas special for a little boy or a little girl here in Winnipeg, right at home.
That's terrific. So all the TD branches in Winnipeg, we're collecting toys and we're collecting funds, and the culmination is the train that came in here?
Yeah, we start off in November, and all our branches decorate toy boxes. The staff have a lot of fun with that. We have a contest who has the best toy box. We collect toys. We collect cash donations from our customers, from our staff, and it's all brought together today with our toy train.
That's just fabulous. It's just a great program for TD to be involved in. We're thrilled that you guys are a partner here for the 30th annual Christmas Miracle. You know, going forward, if people still wanted to make donations, are they able to do that?
Yeah, we're still taking donations at TD Canada Trust, so if you can't make it down to the mall today, absolutely drop into any one of our TD Canada Trust branches, and we'll be happy to take your toy or your cash donation, and we will make sure the Christmas Cheer Board gets it.
Well, I knew we made a good decision when Illegal Curve decided to do our bank banking with TD Canada Trust. So
Thank you. We're
thrilled that you guys were able to participate in this, and thrilled you could be a small part, you know, as we all are in this great program.
Yeah, it's a great partnership.
Terrific, Anne. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
And thank Anne, of course, for that overdraft protection we have.
Yeah, of course. We need that overdraft protection. Anne Taylor, district...
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Anne Taylor, she's the district vice president of TD Canada Trust. Huge partners of ours here with the 30th annual Christmas Miracle. I mean, that's just 700 toys. That's just terrific.
Yeah, that's a great cause. And you know what? Been doing it for a long time, as she said, but 700 toys, and they continue to take donations. So if you're close, there's a lot of TDs out there, obviously. So if you're close, stop by.
Yeah.
What we wanted to say to Richie is... We've got a few Illegal Curve hats to give away.
That's
yes,
right.
If our you're first one.
If you're down here at St. Vitale Center, like this young, this fine gentleman
this
over
guy's
here,
getting a hat.
If you come down to St. Vitale Center to the food hall, make either a cash or toy donation. You can do that over at the Fab and Bob part, the section here in the food hall. And then if you come over here, say hello to us at Illegal Curve. We got some hats we're going to give away to our fans that so desire, the great Illegal Curve hats that we've been talking about over the years. So just our little way of participating here in the Christmas Miracle, the 30th annual Christmas Miracle. Let's talk about some of the issues here, guys. After Thursday night, it really came down that there's three key issues that these sides are fighting over. The first one is the length of the CBA. The NHL wants a 10-year CBA with an opt-out after 8 years, for both sides after 8 years, and the NHLPA has offered an 8-year agreement with a 6-year opt-out. You know, let's start with that one first. That seems like it should be pretty easy in order to come to a solution, but my question is, why doesn't the NHLPA want a longer agreement?
That's the odd part, Drew. I mean, there's some rumblings that Don O'Fair said, I want the next block of players to be able to vote on their future, so I want it to be open season then. There's a couple other reasons you've heard. We can explore them, but I think the reality of the situation is this. In every negotiation of a collective bargaining agreement, the players end up giving back. So to me, as we spoke about prior to the show, why would you want to shorten a deal when you know the next deal will likely lead to you getting a little bit less of the cut again?
That's right.
So to me, you want a 10-year deal. I mean, you want to take your lead from the NFL and the NBA. And I know baseball, you can't really compare. And Donald Fier was working there, but because of their no cap. But NFL, NBA have got 10 years. Take that lead, follow along. And another thing is, do you want another labor stoppage? Clearly you don't. Clearly the owners don't. You got to make it right 10 years. I mean, it's not a short one. This one, past one was, 8 years? So, it doesn't really make sense to me why the players would want a shorter deal. I've taken into account all the facts. I just think the longer you go, the less your cut gets, or the later that your cut gets renegotiated.
Well, let me ask you this. After each and every, whenever CBA comes up for expiry, it's usually the owners who are desperate to see it come to an end. They're the ones who wanted to see the current CBA the previous CBA come to an end, not the owners, not the players. The players would have been happy to continue under that same format. It's usually the owners who end up, by the end of it, wanting to renegotiate it because somebody has found a loophole in which to exploit it for the benefit of their team. And the NHL is doing everything in their part to close those loopholes now. But ultimately, there will be some loopholes. And wouldn't you rather it be 10 years down the road where the NHL has to suffer through it, then 6 years?
Eric Hatchett had a really good article today.
Eric Hatchett of the Globe and Mail.
And my favorite.
Friend of the show.
Yeah.
You guys know. He was he wrote in the Globe today that at the end of the day, the owners, and I guess the agents really and the general managers, what they're going to do is they're going to find a loophole in the agreement and they're going to exploit it.
Okay, but let's forget the loophole, Richie. At the beginning of the last CBA, it was the beginning of the salary cap era, okay? Mm-hmm. And Gary Bettman said this on Thursday night, and I was 100% in agreement with him. I'm not saying I'm pro-owners. I'm just saying that you can't argue with the facts. Revenues have gone up every year. Mm-hmm. Salaries have gone up every year. Mm-hmm. Because the salary cap is tied to revenue, obviously, as it will be most likely next time.
Which is why, by the way, I'm still against the cap system.
But... let's say that we're going to have another cap, okay? You have a 10-year CBA, and it's called a mutual reopener after 8 years, which I imagine means you can renegotiate it or possibly... I mean, it could be as short as 8 years, really, without getting into the minutia, right?
Either party can opt out.
You can opt out. And That means that if revenues continue to go up, like they did from 2004, 2005, pardon me, to 2012, salaries will continue to go up.
Right. As the revenue grows, so do salaries in accordance.
Right. And it seems that Donald Fear and Steve Fear and the NHLPA have a little bit of an uncertainty what the economic picture will look like, and they favor maybe a 5 or 6 year deal. But regardless, it's still going to be tied to revenue, and salaries will most likely continue to rise.
What did you expect in this day and age, with everything being inflationary, that a decade from now, hockey-related revenue is going to be more than, say, $2.2 billion?
Well, apparently one of the kickers there, I had read in an article, I think it was Elliot Friedman this morning, that said the players want a clause that says the agreement gets to be renegotiated if revenues hit $4
billion. $4 billion is a lot of money for not a terribly successful, supposedly, sporting league.
And according to John Shannon this morning, 12 of 30 teams made a profit last year. Now, you and I, and as you, I think, would all be a consensus and agree that in reality, these teams make money in many other ways, and they're able to mask a lot of their dollars. Some of them are losing money.
Those that don't have supplementary revenue. No. If you're strictly a hockey organization, you might be losing money. If you're a hockey organization that's a tenant in an arena, you might be losing money. But if you're a hockey organization who owns the arena and owns a dozen supplementary businesses to that, or gets all the revenue from all the concerts, you're not losing money. The Florida Panthers proved that we spoke about last week.
And it should be mentioned too, Richie, that the NHLPA is making a big deal about increasing revenue sharing. It might not be. It's also dependent on the other things that happen. But it's mind-boggling that the NHLPA would be fearful that 5 or 6 years from now, the economic picture is going to be uncertain. We know that the Canadian TV deal is going to be renewed in a couple years. Mm-hmm. It's possible that we get more relocation fees if a couple of these franchises move. And I mean, I'm not saying that the Phoenix Coyotes are moving. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they might be staying in Phoenix. But we know that Toronto is ready for a new hockey team. Quebec City wants a hockey team. Mm-hmm. Seattle might want a hockey team. Mm-hmm. That's $60 million in expansion fees or around there. So, I mean, the NHLPA to say, well, we're not sure if 6 years from now, the economic picture is going to be that good. It's a little bit suspect to me.
If you just go back for a second before we get into the issues next segment.
Okay.
If you said to the NHL owners today, do you want the system that you're close to getting right now, which, by the way, I don't think is great for the fans necessarily, or do you want the system that you gave up in 2004? I'd be interested to know what the answer would be. Remember that their old system, you had control of a player's rights.
The old system prior to a salary cap?
Yes. You had control of a player's rights.
Until they were 31.
Until he was 31.
Right.
All through his prime years. He wasn't a UFA, an unrestricted free agent, until he was 31. On the downside of his career, most likely.
Especially if he's come into the league. I mean, if he's come into the league when he's 18, then he's already played 13 years. He's got all that wear and tear on his body. Even if he comes into the league at 21, you get 10 good years out of a guy before you might lose his rights.
Right.
Think about that. 10, and so what happened in there? There's a little bit of arbitration. So if you couldn't afford a guy, he was making a lot of money, then you could trade him.
Right.
Or you could find a way to pay him.
And Richie, if I know you well enough, sorry, where you're going with this. Fear wants the salary cap gone.
For sure. And it won't be gone. But I just wonder how many NHL owners, I realize they're controlling costs now and they're making more money. Now, some of those guys who are controlling costs, they all are, but who are making more money are paying it back into revenue sharing. I realize they're making more for the most part, but I think the league as a whole would be more interesting, successful without the capital. And people say Winnipeg couldn't survive. I don't agree with that.
Expand on that a little bit more, why you don't agree
with
that.
There's revenues here.
Yeah. Like the Jets had about $100 million in revenue last year.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
There's revenues here. They're making other forms of revenue. Smart management can handle that.
Yep.
If you draft well under an old system, think about under the old system. If you draft well, if you draft Tkachuk, Solani, Zhamnov, all those guys, and you don't trade them for Kilgour and Tverdovsky, don't trade him moving for, Jeremy Roenick, that trade was fine, but then you had Tkachuk there for a while. But the point is,
you hold on to a guy for 13 years. If you know what you're doing and you're not relying on free agency in order to build a successful team, mm-hmm. you you have a guy for 13 years. And free agency, yeah, when it hits at 31, should be used to fill out a roster spot or two when you're close to the Stanley Cup.
And, Drew, one could make the argument that without a salary cap, a smart, prudent team like the Jets would still spend around that same amount of money to be profitable, regardless if there was a salary cap
or
not.
That's the whole point, right?
If there's not a salary cap, and not, it's not going to be an issue because there is a salary cap, but on a hypothetical, so some teams go and they spend their brains out. The Rangers, the Leafs, mm-hmm, the big market teams go and spend their brains out. Well, look, we saw that the Rangers couldn't win when they were spending their brains out. They had bad, they spent, yep, as much money as humanly possible in the NHL.
Bobby Holik, God bless him, he's been on our show, but he was making $9 million, yeah, and he right, probably shouldn't have been.
Of course he shouldn't have been. So the Rangers, who really, I mean, money is of no object to them for the most part, go and spend foolishly. They don't win. A smart team that drafts well, like you said, holds on to their assets for a minimum if they want to hold on to them, or, you know, for 13 years if they don't want to trade the guy. Well, 13 years is a long time if you're smart, if you're good at drafting, and if you're good at, you know, the sort of base economics of sport.
And you don't have to spend money. So you don't have to give, not that somebody forced Don Waddell, because if somebody forced Don Waddell into his moves, it looked better than the moves he made of his own volition.
When he was the general manager of the Atlanta Thrashers.
The point is, somebody you wouldn't have to pay to get up to the bottom of the cap, in theory. A guy like Ron Hainsey, 4.5 cap hit a year. And we'll talk about Ron Hainsey later in the show. I know some people want us to talk about it, and we will. You won't overpay to get under the, to get to the bottom of the cap. You can make your own decisions. And then the middle class doesn't get paid more than they're entitled to. You pay your best players what they're entitled to because they're worth the money. And you fill out your roster with the entry-level deals.
Hold on, you said middle class. Is Barack Obama around somewhere?
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the 30th Annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive at St. Vitale Center Food Hall. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, shortly after 12:30 in the afternoon. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. I'm reliably informed that there are 20 tickets left for tonight's 9:15 p.m. show featuring Daryl Lennox. If you've never seen Daryl Lennox, he's one of the most sought-after comedians, most requested comedians by fans of Rumors. He's absolutely top-notch. So if you're looking for something to do tonight, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club has a few tickets remaining for tonight's show. Coming up, of course, Daryl's here also next week. After Daryl, we have some great comedians coming in. Steve White on New Year's Eve. So if you haven't made your New Year's Eve plans yet, we're already skipping over the Christmas season. And if you're looking for New Year's Eve plans, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club is the place to be for New Year's Eve. Give them a call at 488-4520. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, we spoke about the CBA issues, the length of time as being one of the issues. The second issue that is really what, and it's referred to as the hill that the NHL refuses to die on, pardon me, is willing to die on, is regarding player contract terms. The NHL wants a 5-year limit on contract lengths with an option to re-sign your own player for 7 years, while the NHLPA has countered with a maximum of 8 years on contract lengths. You know, let me ask you this. Why is the NHL so insistent on this length of contract?
I don't know. I mean, again, this is what you're talking about. The league is trying to please itself, so it wants to take out the long-term deals. Well, if you're signing a guy to a long-term deal, you're taking on that risk of having a guy for that long. I mean, the Detroit Red Wings look good, you know, in terms of you look at their roster, and they signed a bunch of these guys to long-term deals and got them to lower their cap hits. But
Datsyuk, Zetterberg.
But, I mean, look at the Red Wings right now.
Being the main ones.
And they have some young guys coming in, and they have reasonable cap hits, mind you, and the cap generally goes up. Even with the 50-50 split, it's right, going to generally go up over time. Although it'll take a drop back now if they agree on 50-50. Having said that, you know, are all those deals great when the players are 36, 37? They're still eating a significant cap hit? You know, I don't know. Do you want that? You know, was Jeff Carter really easily moved? No, you have to take back, you know, you have to take back
Luongo.
Jack Johnson, another guy who's, yep, hard to move. Roberto Luongo, great, yep, example, Ezzy. Hard to move. Yep. So the team's taking on the risk of giving the guy the long-term deal. If the GMs were smart enough, they would realize that the long-term deal generally isn't that beneficial. And even if you want to lower the cap hit, how much are you lowering a buy, and what is it buying you in that year? And is half the time, these teams don't go all the way to the top of the cap, so it's an internal budget. So I just think, I realize that the NHLP has agreed to 8 years, and the players are at, and the league's at five. First of all, I know they're probably not going to agree to eight. Find the NHL. Eight's fine.
Richie, there's two things
Let me ask you this question. Sorry, Ezzy, let me just ask you this question. You know, if they have the 5% variance, whereas the contract years can't be plus or minus 5%, shouldn't that take care of any of the backdiving contracts? If you want to sign a guy for 12 years, it's hard to circumvent
the cap. To give him $5 million
a year. It's hard to circumvent the cap when you can't have the contract
and
$1
million
per year. Be more plus or minus 5%.
Well, let's quickly back to the Red Wings. You have Johan Franzen signed through 2020.
Yep. Zetterberg and Datsyuk both have long-term deals.
And Zetterberg signed through 2021. We're in 2012.
Yep.
You can honestly tell me that Zetterberg and Franzen look as good now as they did 4 years ago. 3 years ago.
Or is Roberto Luongo going to look that good, you know, 6 years from now? Richie, remember last segment you talked about the salary cap? To me, there's two things here. Because you know that the NHLPA knows that Gary Bettman's not getting rid of the salary cap. The NHL owners,
that's right,
not just Gary Bettman, the owners aren't going to accept that. If you can only sign a guy to 5 years and or your own players to 7 years, that's going to limit your ability, for example, to sign a guy who's coming off of his entry-level deal like a Steven Stamkos or a Sidney Crosby long-term. You want to sign those guys long-term. There's certain guys like that who deserve those long-term deals.
Long-term, meaning I want to sign a guy to a 10-year deal after his entry-level deal of 3 years.
Right.
How many years is that?
Total? 13.
How many years do they have under the old system?
You're exactly right.
I know that doesn't really matter in this situation, but it's that whole idea.
In the PR war, what the NHLPA and the players say, and you know everyone here has heard player after player after player say this, whether it's Shea Weber, Zach Parise, guys that recently signed those 12-year deals. Well, the owners just signed us those deals 4 months ago. Why do they want to limit contracts? Well, it's pretty obvious, and they have a point that all of a sudden, 4 months after signing these contracts, 5 months, whatever, signing these contracts, all of a sudden, they don't want to sign guys long-term. Well, the reality is because they want to control themselves.
Because they cannot control themselves. Exactly.
Or they can't, yeah, right.
You're exactly right. And listen.
All of these, sorry, go ahead.
Look at baseball.
Yeah.
They want to avoid the Rick DiPietros of the world.
Look at Josh Hamilton right now.
Yeah.
There's some drug issues.
Yeah.
Alcohol issues.
Yeah.
He's fallen off the wagon a few times.
Yeah.
I've been there.
And he's been injured. And he's had injury history.
And he's 31 years old.
And what are teams doing? There's speculation that a team won't even go to 4 years on him. If that guy played in the NHL, you give him 10 years immediately. Because the NHL general managers do not have the discipline or use their discretion to sign these guys to the term that they should be able to. So what they're doing is they're saying, I want it in the bargaining agreement to limit myself, because I can't make a proper decision. I say let them live by their decisions. I mean, we're already at the point where they're not going to anymore.
Well, you're absolutely right in that this clause is strictly the NHL saying to its general managers, we know you cannot control yourselves.
Do you want the NBA system where trades are virtually impossible because of all the cap numbers that need to match up? Do you want that system where there's 5, 6, 7 good teams and the rest are just also-rans?
And when you're a mediocre team in the NBA, you're pretty much a mediocre team in the NBA for a decade.
And I don't think
you can't get out of that trap.
And I don't think that'll happen because the NBA is a star sport. You know, it's five guys basically. You have two star players and you're going to be good.
Right.
But the idea is that there's no interesting dynamics during the season because contracts are all the same and they're hard to trade because, you know, the good players aren't going to get traded and there's no real middle ground. And I know the NHLPA is worried about having no middle ground. In any event, are you telling me, again, look at the issues in totality here. We have term of the CBA. One guy wants 10, one wants 6. Eight sounds reasonable to me.
It's a good splitting of the difference.
Right.
We're looking at contract length.
How long did that take? 3 seconds to figure out?
Yeah, exactly. We're looking at contract length. One wants 8, one wants 5, kind of 7, so we'll say 6. 7 it is.
Richie, I believe the word is it's called compromise.
Yeah.
That's the word. And there's none of that right now. And
now, how much of the fact that there's none of that has to do with the, in your opinion, the poisoned atmosphere that exists in the negotiating room?
It's not that there's none of it. It's that it takes them so damn long to come to the agreement.
Guys, Ryan Rashog of TSN, who we've had on before, covers the Oilers, but he works for TSN. He did a good interview with Ron Hainsey. He was talking about there was a belief that there was too many people in the room. 18 players, 6 owners. And then you had Steve Fear and Bill Daly apparently not directly involved but taking notes. And then obviously Gary Bettman and Donald Fear were instructing everyone. You know what? I happen to agree with that. And I'm not sure how... I mean, the problem is they all agreed to that. So they didn't want to have six players, six owners, because then it wouldn't be fair. There wouldn't be enough players.
You could put a 300 players and six owners, and it wouldn't necessarily be
right.
fair on that crowd.
But I mean,
well, and that's what my point was last week. I mean, as much as...
To negotiate, it's fine. Sorry, Drew. To negotiate, it's fine. To come to an actual formal agreement, it's not fine.
Well, let me... And it's obvious now at this point that they were never going to come to an actual agreement without Donald Fear re-entering the room.
Well, hold on a second.
How do they come to an agreement without him being in the room? That's what I want to know.
That's what I want to know, too.
How do they come to an agreement with him being in the room?
No, I want to come to an agreement. I want to negotiate an agreement without my lawyer. If I'm negotiating the agreement and I'm signing it without my lawyer's consent or approval, then what I'm doing is I'm firing my lawyer.
Which is why I said last week it never made any sense whatsoever for the NHL to agree to that meeting without Donald Fear in the
Drew,
room.
The idea was, I think, and this is where the whole confusion was.
Sorry, let me just interrupt and make one more point here. And if the NHL can't work with Donald Fear, suck it up. You don't get to choose who your opponent
That's
is.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Exactly. They hired a lawyer to deal with him. They think he's capable. He is capable. You need to deal with him.
That's right. And I'm no fan of Donald Fear. I think the method in which he has negotiated throughout this process is somewhat shameful and a bit of a black mark on his record, especially his actions of Thursday night playing with fans' emotions.
Well, let me.
That's who the NHLPA agreed, they hired. It's not the NHL's responsibility to say, no, we won't negotiate against that guy. He's hurt our feelings too much. Well, suck it up.
And Drew,
that's not your say whatsoever.
What we don't know is that the NHLPA kind of thought, even though Steve Fear and Bill Daly were in the room, and then Gary Bettman got in the room, they were kind of thinking, at least from what Ron Hainsey said, and he also agrees that there was miscommunication, so he's not saying this himself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were kind of thinking, okay, hold on a second. We're getting close to a deal here. Why are you saying Donald Fear can't come back in the room? It's almost like they were supposed to leave the room and for these negotiations so that they could make some progress without those guys being in there. The whole understanding was as soon as they come close, then they come back in the room. So for the fact that there was all of this discussion and bickering, it was almost like bickering these press conferences and these statements. I mean, who cares who's in the room? Who cares who isn't in the room? Get the deal done.
Another report said that they didn't necessarily say it's a deal breaker, but what they said is the owner said if Donald Fear comes in, then we're going to leave the process and Gary will come in and take it from there. So you hear two different sides. In any event...
Oh, it's not like we haven't heard two different sides during this entire process.
Yeah, that hasn't happened at all. Anyways, let's go to break. We have much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the Food Hall at St. Vitale Center. It's the 30th annual Christmas Miracle brought to you in part by Super Lube Auto Centers on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. About 10 minutes to 1 o'clock. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Jamie McLennan of TSN. We'll talk a little bit CBA with him. We'll talk about his new book, all sorts of things.
What about his new baby?
And his new baby.
Come on.
I wish him a congratulations on that. Of course, that's coming up in about 10 or so minutes' time. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the coal-fired difference at 1450 Taylor Avenue. Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza. Pizza baked, well done.
Carbone is the only I better get that right.
Yeah.
Coal-fired pizza oven.
Easy for you to say.
What about behind us? Is this a coal-fired pizza oven, or is this just
a fireplace?
Oh, it's a fireplace.
Yeah,
okay. Should I take that pizza out just put in there? Okay.
I don't know why you're cooking a pizza in the fireplace behind us, but that's your business and your business only.
It's not cooking very well.
But it smells like pepperoni, so you're happy, right? The third issue in this CBA negotiations that's really supposedly holding us up is one on compliance. And this is the one that's sort of the most confusing out of all of them. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but it sort of sounds like Donald Fear is saying that the agreement that we sign really shouldn't be the actual agreement for the first couple of years. It has to do with escrow payments. It has to do with sort of the transition that they're talking about in order to get people to comply with the lowered salary cap. This is the one that's sort of the most confusing of them all.
Okay, so I'll kind of touch on this. Pierre Lebrun wrote a little short blog on ESPN. He's from TSN as well. He wrote this. Donald Fear, as you know, regarding the compliance, no compliance, buyouts, or caps on escrow in transition, which is probably sounds like...
Gibberish?
Gibberish to most people. Donald Fear brought up brought this up last week. A desire to either limit escrow early on in the new CBA and allow teams to buy out players, but not have that payment count against the cap.
Okay, stop there. Let's explain that. Each year, players pay into an escrow fund that to ensure that they don't get more than what had been 57% of hockey-related revenue. So they pay a portion of each and every paycheck goes into this general fund, this holding pool, to make sure that at the end of the year they haven't earned more than 57% of revenue. Lately, they've been getting all that money back. Donald Fehr is calling for the elimination of the escrow?
Limit.
A limit to the escrow payments. The players don't like having a certain percentage of their check going into this pool that they may or may not get back at the end of the year.
And it would allow teams to also buy out players but not have that payment count against the salary cap, which I'm against.
Meaning if you signed a bad contract, you can buy that player out. You can amnesty that player. The NBA has an amnesty clause. You can amnesty that player without it counting against A, your salary cap, and B, coming out of hockey-related revenue. So it's really the NHL, you know, a player gets made a free agent for, you know, and it doesn't come off of the books. It doesn't shorten the pool of money available to the NHLPA.
I don't like that first off because I hate the buyout idea. That doesn't count against the cap. You should be penalized for the bad contract you gave out, and you should have to deal with it. If you don't want to deal with it, don't give out bad contracts. To me, it's a fairly simple solution. The NHL's against it because they're already giving $300 million of make-whole payments, which aren't going to be taken into account within the...
It's a lump sum payment, or it's not a lump sum payment, but it's a payment above and beyond everything to do with the hockey-related revenue.
So they think this is just furthering that and adding to that pool. I'm of the opinion that this is kind of a non-issue, really. I don't think Fehr's going to push this too much. It's just using it as leverage. So to me, this isn't really a big issue. I don't think it will be, which then leads back to two issues. What we spoke about before, term of the CBA... Term of the CBA, right? That's one of the issues they're arguing about, and contract length. You do an 8-year CBA, although I prefer 10, you do an 8-year CBA. And the truth is, actually, you do a 10-year CBA with an 8-year opt-out. It's the same thing. The players can opt out, a mutual opt-out.
Sure.
I'm more in favor of that, obviously. But if they absolutely won't, then fine in 8 years, and you get back in here, and you probably lose more the next negotiation 8 years down the road. And you say 7-year limit on contract. You don't give an exception for the players. You know, you don't give an exception for your own team. You say 7 years flat if that's what they want to do. And call it a day. Again, didn't take very long.
It didn't take very long. And, Richie, like you said, that lump sum payment, the owners have increased from, let's say, 210, 211, whatever the amount of money was before, and they've gone up to $300 million. That amount of money, those make-whole payments, that's the big deal here. And it's unbelievable.
Hey, let me ask you this. Do you believe Gary Bettman when he says everything's off the table after Thursday night?
No.
No.
Because without that on the table, then you might as well kiss the season goodbye now.
So how does this get kickstarted again? Does the NHLPA reach out to the NHL?
They're like 4 years apart.
I know that. You know that. Ezzy knows that. The public knows that. I'm not sure that Fehr and Bettman and the NHL and NHLPA totally can rationally think about that at this point in time.
Well, I think it kickstarted that. Bill Daly or Steve Fehr, one of them will call each other, you know, on Monday, and they'll get back in the room. And if they want, they should get a deal done by the 15th, which is next Saturday, week today, because then you can get started on January 1st.
And hopefully Bill doesn't leave Steve a voicemail. He actually gets through to him. as we know, Donald Fehr didn't like that voicemail that Gary left him very much. But
can we talk quickly about Steve Fehr's sweater?
Sure. You weren't a fan?
Did you see it?
I think Drew owns that same sweater.
Yeah, Drew, you actually would wear a sweater like that.
I'm a bit of
Christmas
a sweater
season.
Guy.
It's the Christmas season. I mean, if you're going to wear a sweater like that, now is as good a time
as any. Would be the time to wear that kind of sweater. It is a little bit of an odd fashion choice.
That wasn't a Christmas sweater. That was just an ugly sweater.
No, an ugly sweater is an important thing also. I'm sure you have a couple ugly sweaters in your closet from days of yore.
I don't wear sweaters. I don't wear sweaters because they irritate my skin. I have very sensitive skin, so I don't wear any sweaters at all.
Oh, there's a whole food hall of people now who aren't hungry anymore after thinking of your skin, let me tell you.
Absolutely. It's didn't need to be shared on live radio. That's
nobody
for sure,
Drew. Nobody needed to know that. I guarantee you that. Let me ask you guys this. Ron Hainsey's been a point of contention now.
He's become a bit of a pariah, to be honest with you.
We have enough time here? We'll quickly talk about it.
We'll talk about it quickly. We have Jamie McLennan. We'll probably come back to Ron Hainsey afterwards.
Okay.
You know, and I asked you guys this question. I asked you this when we were having breakfast this morning. If you're Ron Hainsey, shouldn't you, more than almost any other player right now, want to be playing? Because you're one of the guys who's losing out on the most amount of money. You know, you're scheduled to make, what, $4 million this year?
By the way, I want to go quickly back. If they reach a deal December 15th and the first paycheck is going to be January 1st and that's when they start paying, the question for Donald Fury has to ask himself is, or the players have to ask themselves is, the next paycheck on December 15th, was what they're fighting over these few years worth that paycheck?
That's right, and again, Richie, no matter what happens, if it with the length of the CBA, with the term limits on contracts, the make-whole payments, the reality is these guys still have to get paid. That's still what you're trying to avoid. You still want a half season here so these guys can at least make half of what they were scheduled to make at the beginning of the year. And you're right. I mean, what do we have here? About 35 to 40 days left to make a deal if your drop-dead date or your red alert date is January 5th to 10th at the latest. I mean, that's exactly where they're at right now. So they really can't afford to lose any more time, because you have to assume that, the Christmas week, I mean, we're here raising money for, you know, the Christmas miracle campaign. I mean, you got to think that really they probably only have realistically 3 weeks to get a deal done.
It's probably a reasonable timeline, you say, Ezzy. And I think that should tell you, they won't need those 3 weeks. It really could probably be done in one afternoon at this point.
It could absolutely, I think, be done in one afternoon, Drew. Now, I'm sure there'll be a little bit of haggling over the actual wording of the CBA, but that'll...
Let the lawyers do it behind the scenes so we never have to hear about it.
That's true.
That part will happen where we don't need to know about it.
Let's talk Hainsey after McLennan.
After McLennan, exactly. So let's go to break. We're at the food hall at St. Vitale Center, the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. It's brought to you in part by Rona. You go to any Winnipeg Rona location today, any Winnipeg Rona location, bring in a toy donation, you'll get 10% off your purchase. So it's another place you can donate. We're thrilled that Rona's on board with the 30th annual Christmas Miracle. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Jamie McLennan is up next. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go here on TSN 1290. We're live at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall. It's the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David is a true real estate professional. He takes all the stress out of your real estate transaction. When you need to make a call for a real estate agent, David Carr is the phone number that you need to dial. That is 230-6129. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 204-230-6129 for all your real estate needs, let me tell you. Boys, we're going to have Jamie McLennan on in a couple minutes. Remus is back at the studio trying to get him on air. Jamie, are you there, or should we go to the Hockey Show Hotline?
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jamie McLennan. Jamie, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. First and foremost, congratulations on the new addition to the family earlier this week.
Yeah, it was, it's exciting. First child, and, we're still in the hospital just waiting for the baby to get sorted out, but life's good. You know, it's everyone says now it's say goodbye to your pillow and there's no sleep, and so far it's been true, but it's been worth it all.
Excellent. Glad to hear that everything's going well there. Jamie, we obviously, it's sort of two parts for having you on here to talk CBA, and you also came out with a new book that we'll talk about throughout, a little bit more levity as opposed to what the CBA negotiations have been giving us so far. You know, today, December 8th, most people, a number of months ago, thought that there was an agreement to be had. How is it that we're December 8th today and there's still no collective bargaining agreement in the NHL?
Well, you know, first and foremost, I still believe we're going to have hockey this year, and I still believe there is an agreement to be had. Unfortunately, both sides have, I don't want to say dug their heels in, because I don't want to sound more leaning towards the player's side, because I am a former player, but I also do see the merits of what the owners are throwing down, and I don't see a ton of concessions from the owners right now. You know, people need to take a step back and realize that, you know, this last CBA, they were at 57%, understand, and then the, you know, revenue sharing. And that's basically the owners felt that was too high. But what the owners did, which I thought was, you know, quite ingenious, was they put out such a bad offer, that first offer in July, that they've been working off that offer and saying, well, you know what, we'll come up to 50%. We'll concede on some of these things, but really, when you set the offer so poorly, you're not really conceding. You're just changing off the original offer that you put on the table, which was poor. So I do see the owners being very strong-willed in this, but now the players have dug in, and they've hired Donald Fehr, who is, you know, a master negotiator. And if there is an equal in this negotiating path, we've got... you have to make sure that when it comes down to it, if there's an equal in the Donald Fehr.
I see. Jamie, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, there you go. You cut out on us for a second there. Jamie, sorry, were you finished or?
Yeah, no, I was saying Donald Fehr is Gary Bettman's match when it comes down to it. And that's, right. You know, that's why it's been so frustrating from, I think, the owner's standpoint when it comes down to it, that, you know, that basically they've met their match when it comes to a negotiating partner.
Jamie, we wanted to talk to you about your book that you recently released. It's called The Best Seat in the House, Stories from the NHL Inside the Room, on the Ice and on the Bench. And as you know, I emailed you and told you I already picked up the book. We wanted to ask you, because it's always been said that, you know, the goalies always have the best stories. And, you know, in this book, you have a lot of stories about, you know, different goalies and everything like that. What's kind of your favorite memory as a goalie, or of one of your favorite goalies over the years? Because there's a lot in there. There's one about Ron Hextall and Luongo. But what was almost one of your favorite stories writing this book?
You know, it's got to be honest. There's so many, but... one of the ones I loved was about Kiprusoff, when he came to watch me when I was playing with the Russian team, and he was yelling shutout. And I thought it was so funny because, you know, when it comes down to it, you think about goaltenders, that's like a taboo word. You don't say shutout when another goaltender is playing. But, you know, him and Vesetoskola were enjoying themselves a little too much in the stands, and I think there were some beverages involved. You know, once I got into the game, they were yelling it and having some fun. But once I started to get lit up, I think they kind of felt bad until they started yelling shutout, and then things went south for me. So we had a little fun with that after the game and chatted about it. But I told Kipper, I said, don't worry, next time I'm in the stands and you're playing, I'm going to yell shutout to you when you've got a shutout going. So it's kind of been that behind-the-scenes joke. But I thought that was a really funny thing from, you know, an elite goalie like Mika Kipper, off just having fun. And he's not a superstitious guy, but you know, I'm certain that you know, his sense of humor, people need to know what he's all about.
Jamie, I want to ask you, kind of go back and forth with both the book and the lockout. Maybe the lockout first. You were in the league for a long time, starting in 93-94 with the Islanders and playing until 07 with the Flames. So you went through both lockouts, the 94-95 shortened season, and of course losing the season in 2004-2005. Which lockout of those two does this remind you more of?
You know, I got to be honest. I think this reminds me of the 05 one, and I hate saying that because I think it scares fans that says that think that we're going to lose this season. But, you know, both of them were different. I would have to say structurally, it's more like 94 because we were fighting, you know, it was about merchandising and licensing money. In 05, it was the structure and the system, the cap or no cap. So if I had to look at just the actual deal, you know, they're fighting about money, which is more about 94. But the feel of it, everything that, you know, feels, and especially from the information, now it's a Twitter world and the information is instantaneous, it feels more like 2005, where both sides have, you know, dug their heels in. And, you know, they've already shown, the owners have already shown, and Gary Bettman and the crew have already shown that they're not afraid to cancel a season. So that's what's what's kind of looming in the darkness here, and I think that scares not only the players, the owners, some of the owners who do want to play, and the fans, that we could lose this season.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jamie McLennan, talking CBA and his new book, The Best Seat in the House.
Jamie, when you were playing and you played on a number of teams, you know, we saw this week owners and players sitting in the room and talking. How much interaction did you have with the owners that you played for during the course of your career?
In Calgary it was great because a lot of the owners were visible and around and very classy men. There was a man named Harley Hodgkiss who, passed away, unfortunately, but he was around quite a bit and very visible and just a class quality person. The owners in Calgary were very nice. When I was a player rep last lockout, I was a player rep for the Florida Panthers, and the owner, Alan Cohen, actually flew me down to have a face-to-face meeting. So I did have quite a bit of interaction last lockout with the owner. And, it was different. His dynamic is he was selling a different product than, for example, the Calgary Flames, because he was in a market that, was struggling. So his take on the business side of hockey was a lot different than what I'm seeing, especially from a Canadian team's perspective. But, I did have somewhat interaction with some of the owners over my career, but it's not like you saw them on a daily basis. You saw them, maybe once a month and had some interaction with them, and they were always nice to you as a player because you are one of their assets. But it's not like your best buddies with them.
If you don't mind, Jamie, when you talked about Alan Cohen before, obviously sold the team since, but can you expand a bit on how he perceived the game from his perspective in Florida vis-a-vis, how the perception was for a guy like Harley Hodgkiss?
Well, yeah, I mean, Alan Cohen, I'm sure was a wizard financially in what made him a multimillionaire. But, he viewed the Florida Panthers, I think, as an investment, as a business that he wanted to make money off of, where, Harley Hodgkiss, I'm sure he wanted to make money. And I can't say it was just Harley alone. There was a group of seven or eight wonderful owners there in Calgary. They certainly didn't make their money off the Calgary Flames. If anything, they interjected a lot of money in the 80s and in the 90s when the dollar wasn't as strong and they were fighting to keep that team in Calgary. They were first and foremost fans in Calgary that wanted to make their product work, where I sense that Alan Cohen in Florida, treated it more like a business. So that's if you ask me the difference between those two groups of ownerships, that's what I'd have to define as the number one thing is in Florida it was a business, and certainly you could see that it was hemorrhaging money. In Calgary it was more a business from a fan's perspective, and you certainly got that feel from both sides.
Back to the book, Jamie, you look over the course of your career and you read about it in the book. You're about 26 years old, you hop into St. Louis and you're backing up, four-time Stanley Cup champion Grant Fear. Can you talk about backing up Grant Fear, and can you talk about what he was like and what made him so great?
Well, it's so weird to, be basically backing up a living legend. I mean, Grant Fear was somebody I grew up watching, I loved and loved as a player, and then you get to meet the person and he's even better live and as a real person. He's a better human being than he is hockey player, if that's hard to believe. And it was surreal for the first while, and then once you get to see what they're like and how they carry themselves, it's so impressive. Everything about him was a championship, that championship demeanor. And, just the way he handles everyday stress and how he'd walk into a room and kind of command it. He's not a vocal guy. He was a guy that would back it up with action. And that's what was so impressive with a guy like Grant. And in my book, actually, I tell of a funny story of an interaction between him and Chris Pronger, and polar opposites of two great players. Chris has given him heck one day because, Grant lets in a soft goal, and Chris is fighting for the plus-minus, championship of the season. And basically, it's about a $1 million bonus for Chris. So Grant lets in a bad goal, and and Chris comes to the bench and starts yelling at me like I let it in, and he's yelling at me and saying, tell that guy back there, Fierzy, to wake up. And you can see Grant laughing. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, Fierzy's disallowed a bad goal. And we're winning 5-2 with about 5 minutes left, so you know that we've won the game. And Grant's laughing about it. So sure enough, he comes to the bench at a TV timeout, and he's drinking water, and Chris is still hot. And he yells down at Fierzy, wake up. And Grant turns to me and Chris, and he's got a big smile on his face, and he says, you better be nice to me or I'll allow another one. And he sneaked away. Like, that's what he was like. And you know, that's the sign of a championship, you know, a quality player, a Hall of Famer. And that's exactly what Grant was like. The way he carried himself was just with so much sureness in his game. And it was very impressive. And to this day, we're friends, and I respect him so much. But he taught me so much, and not on the ice, but off the ice, too, and how to carry yourself.
Jamie, we'll let you go on this last question. A lot of your colleagues, especially with this lockout in place, are now playing overseas in the KHL, in Russia, or some of the former Russian republics. You spent some time in Russia, sort of a cup of coffee. Can you talk to us a little bit about your time playing over in Russia?
Well, you know, I got an offer to sign in with a team called Magnitogorsk, Metallurg Magnitogorsk. It's where Malkin's from and is currently playing. A very, very respected team in the KHL, but you know, it's such a polar opposite of the National Hockey League and the lifestyle I was used to. Yes, financially it was great, but Russia is a different animal. And I went there and I spent 6 weeks there. I'm glad I went, but I'm glad I came home. To be honest, it was there were so many things that were just such a different vibe. You know, obviously they try their best to be the NHL. I think they are the best league outside of the NHL when it comes to caliber of hockey, but there were so many things. I mean, from landing in Russia and 3 hours later our bus driver getting into an argument with another car who wouldn't move out of the way, so the guy gets out of the car with a gun and literally holds it to our bus driver's head. And I'm the only guy on the bus who's paying attention and yelling, gun, the guy's got a gun. And our captain just leans over to me and he says, hey, man, it's Russia. Everyone's got a gun. Like, the bus driver wasn't even afraid when the guy had a gun to our bus driver's head. And it was just, it was such a different, yeah, I guess just culture shock. But like I say, it was such a neat experience. I'm glad I went. I'm glad I came home at that time. 6 weeks was enough. I think that they thought an NHL goalie should get a shutout every night, and I thought that they should give me a day off here or there because we practiced like 6 hours a day. It was ridiculous. But wow. I really enjoyed the experience, and I respect a lot of things about the KHL, but it just made me miss home more because the everyday things that I enjoy in life. I'll tell one quick story. There was a grocery store across the street from my apartment, so I went in there with one of the players. And I thought the place had been robbed. There was literally like one can of Coke on the shelf with like a bruised apple and maybe like a box of macaroni and cheese. And that's what they were selling. Like, there was nothing else. Like, I thought the place had been like basically looted or something. But they said, no, this is all we have for sale today. And that's kind of what the culture shock was like. You take for granted some of the free things that we have over here in life and some of the choices, put it that way.
Culture shock indeed. Jamie McLennan from TSN and the author of The Best Seat in the House. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And once again, congratulations to the new addition to the family.
Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime. Look forward to talking soon with you.
Take care, Jamie. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive live from the Food Hall at St. Vitale Center. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at the Food Hall at St. Vitale Center, the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive. Come on down, bring a new unwrapped toy or a cash donation. Credit is accepted on site, debit is accepted on site, cash, checks, Visa, whatever you want. You come down, you make a cash or toy donation, you get entered into one of the raffle draws. Just a tremendous number of prizes, 5 prizes available that you can be entered into. Perhaps you want to go to Veradero, Cuba. courtesy of Transat Holidays, all-inclusive holiday for two to Bellevue Palma Real Resort in Varadero, Cuba. Think you, what do you guys say? You want to go out on the road, do the show from Varadero?
Yeah, Drew, are you one of the two who goes on that trip, though?
Yeah, exactly. You have to take me with you is how it works. And Legal Curve, we're going to throw in a special prize as well. Mm-hmm. You come down, you make a donation. You make it over at the where our sister stations, Fab or Bob, are. Come over and see us here at the TSN 1290 area. We'll give you an Illegal Curve hat.
We'll give you Ezzy.
Yeah. You know, we'll give you Ezzy as well. So, you know, you get a hat and you get Ezzy.
Well, the reality is, Drew, I'm not contributing enough anyways to the show, so someone might as well take me. Actually, you know what we should do? You take me just for your shopping.
Yeah.
So I come along with you, do your shopping.
You're a personal shopper.
Right. And then I'll come back. You return me.
Yeah.
Where there's adult supervision.
Of course, exactly. You know, that sounds like a great idea. So anyways, come down, say hello to us here. We're with the TSN 1290 section.
Yeah, grab a seat on the couch like these girls are doing here. There's comfy couches here. Say hi.
Yeah, you're going to take a nap in a couple minutes.
Yeah. Well, and we've got this Jets recliner here, which I believe we're also giving away.
That's right, courtesy of Kern Hill Furniture.
Come on down.
Exactly, come on down. A beautiful Jets recliner, nice Lazy Boy Jets recliner right behind us. It looks great, doesn't it? Looks quite comfortable. You were sitting in it earlier.
Yep.
It's very comfortable. I want Ezzy to tell his old story about the experiences at Kern Hill.
What experiences? Oh, you're thinking of...
Oh, that's right.
No. That's to be shared off air.
We'll share that one off.
If you hang out with us...
You can follow us
at a watering hole. Then we'll tell you that story.
Sure. Follow us at Illegal Curve. Maybe you'll hear.
Maybe I'll tweet
there.
It out. Yeah.
Exactly right. Guys, let's talk about Ron Hainsey because he's really become a sort of a focal point of the fans' frustration now. Really magnified itself Thursday night.
Yep.
There was significant vitriol Thursday night after the dueling press conferences. A lot of it against Donald Fehr and a lot of it against Ron Hainsey.
Yeah. Which I think it was overblown quite a bit, to be honest with you.
That's a fair point. I don't disagree with you. Ron Hainsey's making $4 million this year?
It's a 4.5 cap, but he's actually slated to make $3 million this year.
Okay, so he's
signed a five-year, $22 million deal with Columbus.
So if there's no season...
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
If there's no season this year...
He was on Columbus before.
Yeah. If there's no season this year, he stands to lose $3 million.
I think And Hainsey should donate half that salary back to Ken Hitchcock, who got him that contract in the first place.
Regardless.
Right. Yeah.
If there's no season this year, he loses $3 million.
Yes, right.
He's an unrestricted free agent after this year.
Yep. He's 31 years old.
Based on his performance, would probably be in the range of getting another contract worth $1 million, $1.5 million.
His salary is going to go down. It's safe to say.
Yeah, Drew, you're looking at more of a million, maybe $1.5 million.
Okay, so this is his biggest contract that he's going to get for the rest of his career.
Likely.
Going to lose out on $3 million if there's no season.
Yep.
Is doing a lot of harm, allegedly, to his reputation amongst the ownership, so much so that he might be blackballed, or there's rumors that he would be blackballed and would not be offered another contract after this season where he's an unrestricted free agency. If you're Ron Hainsey, why are you so actively involved in CBA negotiations?
Well, he wants to have a part in the process, and first of all, I want to say I do not think he wouldn't get a contract. He's a 5'6 defenseman, but he's a 5'6 defenseman, 5'6 meaning like five or six.
Fifth defensemen. Or sixth defenseman on a team, yeah.
He's not a top pairing defenseman.
But he can skate and he can move the puck. Is he strong on the boards? No. Are offensive skills premium? No. Is he that good defensively? Not really. But a guy who can skate and who can move the puck out of his own zone and can play second power play unit if you're in a pinch or you don't have that many offensive defensemen will get a job in the National Hockey League. I'd be more worried if I was Chris Campoli. But in any event, Drew, you know, he wants to have an active role. The problem with Ron Hainsey is Ron Hainsey isn't very likable. I mean, he doesn't smile a lot. He doesn't seem that happy. He kind of seems arrogant.
Are you talking CBA negotiations? Why are you talking?
I thought you were describing Drew there for a second. I wasn't sure if you were talking about Hainsey or just kidding, Drew.
But if he was doing the same things and being, you know,
gregarious?
Yeah. His personality was different. We'd have a different perception as far as I'm concerned. He seems like he gets angry and he gets a little bit emotional. And, you know, if you're Mark Chipman, you're wondering why he wasn't that emotional last year playing as opposed to how emotional he's been.
Well, but did you think he had a bad year for the Jets?
Yeah, he didn't have. Yeah, he had a bad year.
Okay, but let's stay on topic here about his role as...
Drew, he had zero goals and 10 assists.
He's an executive member of the NHLPA. Let's stick to that. Let's not talk about his play on the ice.
Well, no, but his play on the ice factors in if he's going to get another contract.
Right, but we're talking about how he's being perceived with the role he's playing. So let's... I mean, Ron Hainsey, it's clear that you know, people are saying he's the Trevor Linden. You know, that's not true. I mean, in the sense that he's high up, you know, with the NHLPA. Trevor Linden,
who was high up in 2004, 2005
as well. He has a position that doesn't exist anymore where he was the head of the NHLPA, the head player rep. That doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, Ron Hainsey, it's clear, Richie, he's playing a significant role. And he's standing up in the meetings, and he's speaking, and he's representing the players. Now, there have been discussions and stories written and reported on that the players were ready to vote on it, and, you know, Ron Hainsey is one of those guys that's more of a hardline player, if you want to call it that, and that Donald Fehr is really not liking the deal yet. And in that sense, they're far apart, maybe not as far apart as they were in the beginning, Richie. But, you know, when you start to, and you've already said that, and I agree with you, Richie, that to say that he's not going to get a contract is ludicrous. The reality is Donald Fehr is, pardon me, Ron Hainsey is Donald Fehr's right-hand man for the players right now. He's playing a significant role. And he said it himself. I mean, the fact the guy is willing to lose a year of his contract to do what's best for the players. And again, you could argue, is he really doing it, or does he have ulterior motives? Well, I mean, that's what he's saying now, so we have to take him for his word.
I have an idea. The owners are so undisciplined that they probably need a clause in the CBA that they can't sign Ron Hainsey.
Undisciplined after the fact, you mean, in terms of... But, I mean, I ask you, what is the net benefit? And we talk about that a lot on the show. You know, every action, everything you do, every action you have should be for another purpose. Why should Ron Hainsey be a member of, why, like, what's the advantage that he sees in being the face of the NHLPA?
I mean, he might want a career after the fact. He might want to be actively involved. I mean, is he costing himself personally a lot of money? Yeah. And you have to wonder why to some extent. Sure, but you have to give him credit too for sacrificing some of his own money for more rights down the road, you think. I mean, again, I think they're so close now, I'm not sure how much the difference is, but overall, I mean, I don't fault him for it. Should he go about it a better way? Yeah, I think so. I think a little more respectful at times is what I'm hearing. You know, you don't want to be disrespectful in general, especially in negotiations. I know you get emotional, but I think he's, by all accounts, maybe been a repeat offender of getting a little bit overstepping his bounds at times.
Right, Drew, and you know, Elliot Friedman wrote about the Campoli incident where apparently Ron Hainsey stuck up for Chris Campoli in the negotiations. But you know what? I'm going to defend Ron Hainsey a little bit here, and I'm not going to, and again, throughout this entire process, if you listen to the show, I've said that I'm not pro players, pro owners. I want hockey back on the ice for the fans. So I just want to, you know, preface my statement. But you know, in defense of Ron Hainsey, he's got a pretty hard job right now. I mean, the NHLPA, through in you know, the public domain, they're not, I mean, they're taking it right now that, you know, fans want hockey back on the ice. So, you know, he's in there, he's communicating what the owners are telling him back to Donald Fehr and Steve Fehr. And, you know, sure, he's outspoken, but you know, he's strong in his conviction. So, you know, he might be brash at times and he might be aggressive, but you know, this process is complicated. It's not fun. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving parts. So, you know, I think we should at least realize that. I'm not saying, again, I'm not sticking up for him or, you know, saying that, you know, the players are, you know, not part, have a lot to give here. But let's not start saying that, you know, let's not start making Ron Hainsey a scapegoat.
Well, he's entitled to do what he's going to do. You can agree or disagree with him. You know, again, we're not in the room exactly and hearing what he's got to say. If he's being disrespectful of certain people, then I would disagree with him. If he's standing up for what he believes in terms of the players' rights, then he's more than entitled to do that. You can agree or disagree with that stance, but you don't have to, you know, vilify the person for standing up for that.
How many players right now are on Twitter and they're voicing their opinions? Right. It's not just Ron Hainsey here. The players are unified. I mean, it's pretty clear.
Well, I don't know if they're so much unified. I think the vocal players are unified.
Let's talk about if the players are unified. Let's go to break.
I'm unified with you guys.
Yeah, well, you can be a little less unified, exactly.
Okay.
Anyways, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the 30th annual Christmas Miracle Toy and Cash Drive, live from the Food Hall at St. Vitale Center on TSN 1290.